Welcome to IT Talk, Hack Your Tech Career, a WGU-sponsored podcast for aspiring and established information technology professionals. We talk with in-the-know experts to explore what's happening in the tech world and how to land the IT career you want. Let's jump right in.
Hey folks, it's Dave Huff here with another episode of the IT Audio Series. And today we're going to be talking about ransomware. And we've got a panel of program chairs at Western Governors who combined to have over 100 years of experience in the information security and cloud computing area. So we've got some real good experts that I'd like to introduce you to. And we'll talk about ransomware, what it is, how you can protect your company from it, get some perspectives on that and some of the current events. And we'll also talk about how WGU can help prepare students and folks in the industry to protect their companies in the ransomware space. So I'd like to introduce to you guys Dan Morrill, who oversees our cloud program, Mike Morris, who is the program chair and oversees our undergraduate cyber, and Lane Melton, who oversees the graduate cyber programs. Welcome, gentlemen. Appreciate you all taking time to join us today. Yeah, let's start right off at the top. Any of you guys, in the news right now, there's a lot of talk about ransomware attacks and ransomware. What is a ransomware attack?
Ransomware itself is a form of malware. It's a class of malware that's ever-changing. It allows the user of the malware to basically encrypt data as well as propagate throughout a network like a worm. There's multiple types. There's, you know, 30, 40, 50 different variants right now. And they even have ransomware as a service, you know, so you do not have to be a technical powerhouse to be able to use ransomware. You can go on the dark web and pay a price and use a whole series of bots to launch it.
So why is it called ransomware? What's the story there?
Well, ransomware is designed and it's used to do two different things. One, it will encrypt a victim's data. For instance, to say that you are a large university like WGU, and it gets into your network and they encrypt all of our data so that we can no longer access our data. Then it's like if we haven't run our business the way we should and we have our data, we don't have backups, we don't have sufficient backups or up-to-date backups, we can't access that data. Our users, our students wouldn't be able to access their data, wouldn't be able to access their courses. So that's part one. Part two is once the data is encrypted, if you don't pay the price, you won't get your data back. The second thing they're doing now is using it saying, hey, if you don't pay us money, not only are we not going to encrypt your data, but we're going to put it out on the internet. So when you have personally identifiable information out there, you know, now being leaked to the internet, that's a problem.
Can ransomware attacks be prevented? And if so, what are the best practices there to keep control of the data?
Yeah, absolutely. Ransomware, it's like anything, right? Ransomware can be prevented. It gets down to people, processes, policy, and governance, and having a clean house. And so I'm not sure which one you want to go start delving down. I can start talking about people as an example. People by far are the weakest link. The reason they're the weakest link is because people receive an email, a phishing email. That could be the way that the malware comes into the organization. They could be socially engineered. They could get a phone call. For instance, you have a LinkedIn page and it says, hey, Dave, you are the program chair for WGU and network operations. You receive a phone call. Hi, I'm company X and I'd like to start a partnership with WGU. You know, I'm going to shoot you over an email with that. So then they go and they set up a fake company. You know, you could go in and set up your own name and IP, you know, less than $5 in less than 5 minutes. You get an email in, it's now malware. You click on it, open it up, it launches. Another thing that our users don't do currently, all users have a tough time, password management, being able to have strong passwords and maintain and manage those strong passwords. You know, it's tough to have, you know, 50 different accounts and try to keep up with those. And last but not least, VPNs. We have a lot of people now working from home because of COVID. And so they're working from home, or maybe they go to a coffee shop, or maybe they're traveling and they're working on that hotel network. Well, if they don't have a VPN in place, they're not using it, then bad guys can see exactly what you're doing. You know, I can set up a wireless site inside Starbucks and call it Starbucks 2. If I see the first one's called Starbucks 1, you log into it, and then you go out to the internet, and I capture all your credentials. You know, now I can gain access into your company network.
Sounds like on the people side, there's some education, but there's also some technology that we need to put in place to close that gap and to try to control that vulnerability.
Absolutely. Training is key. Being able to train your employees to know what is phishing, know what social engineering is, and how to, you know, try to keep their own environment safe and clean.
Hey, let me throw it over to Dan, because Mike, you mentioned something about policy. Dan, what's your take on that?
So there's something pretty common among a lot of companies that have successful ransomware attacks, and that's they didn't have a defined policy. So either there's a law, a regulation, or an industry standard that's not being adhered to. And just about everything has got one of those three or more things that you should do. Most of the industry standards, you know, like ISO or others, are things that you want to do, minimum standards for securing your data, securing your networks, or training. So because of that lack of policy and lack of policy enforcement, when you go and you do a third-party security audit, you'll come up with deficiencies. And if you don't address those deficiencies, then you end up in what's problems with due diligence. So you end up not meeting any standard, and people don't get trained, and you don't follow a legal or regulatory or industry standard process. You're more susceptible, in my opinion, to ransomware or just hacking in general. So really, it just boils down to governance, how you would approach governance and how you would do your due diligence.
You made an interesting point, too, about the audit and not following up on it, because that was some of the findings in the Colonial Pipeline situation, right?
Yeah, you'll find it's also with Department of Health and Services in England. You'll also find it was with the city of Snohomish here in Washington State. They all had an audit or findings that said you need to do a thing, and they didn't. So they didn't do the governance that they needed to do.
Okay. You know, both of you guys have mentioned governance. And Lane, the program that you oversee as a program chair is our Master's in Information Security and Insurance. That program is geared toward governance, right? Focus on executive and leadership practices. Would having executive and good leadership practices, would that have helped in the case of Colonial? Would it help to prevent their attack? Did they even have security leadership at the top?
Absolutely, Dave. It makes a tremendous difference. You've not only got to have the technical expertise, your boots on the ground, your employees have to be trained, you have to have the governance, but you've got to have the leadership in common domains, in common technology domains. They know what these domains consist of, what they entail, and they know how to address the security issues within those common domains. It's absolutely necessary to understand the common security domains that apply to ransomware. And that's what we focus here at WGU. We try to make sure that we're covering at least 10 domains of security that are going to cover ransomware along with regular data security, telecommunications security, and that type of thing. So governance is absolutely crucial. There's other organizations out there like NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. They have various guidelines that they've established to be able to protect information systems, to certify and accredit information systems, technological-based information systems. So if you secure these based on standards that are already established, tried and true, then you're going to have a better chance at fending off ransomware and people hacking your network in the first place.
So we've talked about people, policy, and governance as three kind of keystones. What happens then if your company is attacked? What can you do to either to minimize the impact, or what are your options if you've lost control of your data and the bad actors come, you know, looking for some sort of ransom to release it? What can a company do at that point?
Dave, there's a couple of things that hopefully the company has done ahead of time, and then we'll kind of go from there. You know, let me back up a step. You know, we're talking about JBL. JBL was just hacked. It was near and dear to my heart because they obviously produce beef.
They're going to wake a sleeping giant there, aren't they?
That's right. That's right. So they recently paid $11 million in ransom. What's interesting there is they spent over $200 million. That's their IT budget for 2021 was $200 million. Mm-hmm. They have 850 IT professionals in there, and you know, yet they had ransomware come in. They paid the money, and you know why they paid the money? Because they didn't want corporate information getting out on the internet. That was a big concern. Now, what could they have done to prepare themselves for something like that? And this is what some of the companies could do. I'm not going to talk about fixing systems. I have a list of 10 thou should do's that maybe we can get to in a minute. But from a governance standpoint, you know, a company should absolutely have an up-to-date incident response plan, a business continuity and disaster recovery plan, and they should practice these. They should have tabletops. They should practice these things yearly. They should involve, you know, all the stakeholders, you know, including legal, including law enforcement, including all the people that would be called if they had an incident, right? Mm-hmm. Another thing they could consider is possibly shifting some of the risks that they're exposed to by having, you know, cybersecurity and business interruption insurance. That is what several companies have done. It was to where they actually mm-hmm. have insurance to help them offset the cost. You know, another thing that they could do is, you know, establish a corporate policy, make sure they have it reviewed by legal for the payment of ransom as an option, and make sure that you're talking with counsel as well as your insurance carrier. Yeah. The reason why is because if they're paying ransom to a country that is on the government's watch list, okay, you could be breaking federal law by paying the ransom.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so there's a lot to it, a lot of options. Go ahead, Mike, you had more?
Yeah, I had one more in there. The other thing, two more, and then I'll be quiet on policy. The other thing a company should be able to do is, you know, define the particulars of when, how, and under what conditions the decision to pay or not pay would be made. You know, mm-hmm. this could also be an executive tabletop type exercise. You know, and last, the thing that the companies really need to consider, what are the disclosure requirements for breach notification in the state or states that they're in? Currently, 48 states across the United States have breach notification laws in place. Two of those are very interesting. New Jersey and Connecticut require that you disclose that you've been breached only if somebody has gotten inside your network. Okay, so if they just get inside your network, you have to disclose that if you're in New Jersey or Connecticut. Again, that could have a big impact on your customer base, right? If your business is, say, protecting somebody else's corporate network, you know, consultant or whatever, and you get hacked, you know, that could be a death nail to your business plan.
Yeah, no, and very few businesses are just in one state anymore. Dan, does operating in the cloud, does that make organizations more vulnerable, or does it give them more protection options? What do you think there?
Yeah, a number of things, especially with feeding into what Mike was saying, is that disaster recovery business continuity plan should be in the cloud, period. There's no reason not to be able to heartbeat between one data center and another data center now. Costs are equal. You can be running concurrent data centers. Boom, done, call it good. But the other thing that's interesting about the cloud and how security works and the shared responsibility model that you would have with a Microsoft or with an Amazon is that you can abstract your security better, right? You can separate out the responsibilities that are strictly your provider, whether those are Amazon or Microsoft, and actually turn those over. And that allows you to free up resources from having to secure physical data centers, from having to do physical other things and focus on code, focus on accounts, and focus on communications. You can actually set it up so that your databases can only talk to certain head units, right? You can't just access them from anywhere. You have to talk very securely between two different databases. Databases can replicate seamlessly across the board between data centers that can be geographically dispersed. So yeah, there's no reason why the cloud can't help you, especially on abstracting security better, but it will also give you that opportunity to do that disaster recovery plan. Because one common thread to everyone that's had and paid ransom is that their backups didn't work.
It seems like, I mean, isn't a good backup the antidote here?
It is. It just depends on how you want to do it and how you want to test for it. You know, Mike was saying, do it as a tabletop. You know, mine is flip one data center off in the cloud, see if you can fail over to the other data center in the cloud, make sure you're running the health checks. You can do this in real time back and forth and not skip a beat. Not miss 1 second of business operations if you're in the cloud by doing it that way.
Hey, Dave, I want to add, obviously you can always do a long list of things to help protect your company, but I have eight that I just want to bring up that companies should consider doing.
Sure.
The first one's a freebie. The first one doesn't cost company a dime. 99.9 companies could do it today with their existing infrastructure, with their existing software that they have currently. You know, that is, on email, make sure that they have bannering turned on so that when you get an external email, it comes up in a banner. First thing at the highlight of your email that you see where it says, this came from outside your organization. Doesn't cost a dime to turn that on. And it really helps your employees understand that, you know, they'll start questioning and be like, well, why did the company president send me an outside email asking right. me to send $100,000 somewhere? I'm not really sure why he would do that. Mm-hmm. You know, and banner rings are a great free one that many companies don't do, that they should be doing. Another one is know your assets. By that, I mean data. You know, as Dan mentioned, up in the cloud, know exactly where all your data is. Where is your data located? What are your networks? What are your devices? Okay, so if you have a good picture of what you own and where it's located, then you can start protecting it. The second thing is, you know, backing up your crown jewel data often in encrypt. As Dan mentioned, a cloud would be perfect in that you could have it in multiple locations, do the failover test, see, you know, does site A equal site B? Yes, you know, that is awesome. Encrypt your data, you know, so if it's your crown jewels, if it's that 5%, 10% of your business, like the heart of your business, encrypt it, you know, decrypt it when needed. As far as, you know, keep your systems patched and segregated where appropriate. Easy thing, you know, but people don't do it. Do vulnerability scans. You name the company, there's multiple companies out there that provide all different types of functionality and vulnerability scanning, but go through and do it. you know, and follow up on the, you know, on those vulnerabilities. Do threat analysis. Make sure there are multiple threat feeds that are out there. You get the threat feeds, you can feed it into your next-gen firewalls and have them automatically block IP addresses, sites that are known bad. Do whitelist, you know, whitelist your applications. Those applications that should be running on your systems, allow them to. Those that don't, you know, won't. You know, as far as in blacklist your non-business site. If folks should not be going to ransomware.com, well, make sure you block that, you know, in your firewalls.
Yeah.
And last but not least, you know, as much automation as you can bring into your log analysis would be great. It would really help your security teams to be able to, if you can automate your log analysis from both network and systems, you know, all your devices, so that you can see when you have an event, when you can see something come into your network, you can see it move laterally across inside your network, and that you can react to that. That's my list.
Yeah, and Lane, so what's, you know, from the top down, how do you affect these type of policies? How does, you know, the governance plan, leadership, executive support, how does that drive these type of things?
Well, again, you've got to have the leadership in place from the get-go. And in the case of this particular pipeline incident, they did not have top-level management from a technical perspective, and you need that. Another keen aspect of this is that our national laws and regulations have not necessarily caught up to the latest, quote-unquote, hacking techniques, okay? So the pipeline industry is not subject, like the utilities company, to various regulations and reporting requirements. They've recently just changed that. President Biden has asked for changes in regulation to the reporting requirements for pipeline type industries, and also the people that they have in place from a management perspective and how they're running their network. So all these regulations are coming down the pike, and you're going to have strong leadership that know these new requirements and are able to technically implement them within the company itself. So you're going to need management. You're going to need people that know these regulations. You're going to need people that have the management and the technical capability to make this happen. And that's exactly what we do in our cyber program at WGU.
All right, Lane, thank you for that. Hey, before we sign off, let me go around the table really quickly and ask you guys about your programs and about how WGU helps to prepare students to be successful in these fields. Dan, what is it about your cloud program that's going to turn out the best graduates that we have?
So the thing I like about this program is that we're Cloud Computing Framework certified, which means you're getting the security. You're getting the cloud computing security practitioner from ISC Squared. You're getting CISA. You're getting Pentest. Plus, you're getting the developer, the architecture, the SysOps, the foundational certs. All this stuff's going to tie together. So you can just plug in and go wherever you land in the cloud.
Right on. How about you, Mike? What defines your program?
In our program, we offer a student will get 14 certs by the time they complete our program. As far as, you know, skill sets, you know, vulnerability analysis, incident response, forensics, pen testing, you know, that will enable them to be able to hit the ground running. These certs will prepare them to be able to respond to an incident within their organization.
Okay. Lane, what about you? What defines your program?
Yeah, when the student comes into the to our program, they're going to leave with two certifications. So one's going to be the Certified Ethical Hacker, and the second one is going to be the Computer Hacking Forensics Investigator. And these are two timely certifications that's really, really going to technically prepare the student to the hacking and attacking demands that are on our network and information systems today. We're also going to prepare them from a managerial perspective. In other words, they're going to know the national laws that have to be followed. They're going to know the common bodies of knowledge in the cyber warfare world, the domains that are applicable to that. They're going to know how to go in and approach things from a technical perspective, but also lead a technical team and have the managerial skills to be able to facilitate people working for them for the betterment of all the companies out there.
Right on. And not to be left out of the discussion, I talk about our network operations and security degree program that culminates in the CCNA. So we have a great suite of certifications, all wrapped in with other courses. It's not everything's a certification at WGU. I think it's important to also point out, gentlemen, that because we're competency-based, we don't really have semesters on timelines, so students can progress as quickly as they can through the programs so that they're out in the industry applying what they learn. They don't have to wait 4 years for an undergrad or 2 years for a graduate degree. As quickly as they can move through the program, pass tests, earn certifications, they can find themselves out in the workforce. All right, folks, thank you for this great discussion. I appreciate your expertise. As I mentioned when we started, there's over 100 years of security expertise on this call, and it was clear listening to you guys that you know what you're talking about. Thank you so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the IT Audio Series.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation has been interesting and helpful. To learn more about preparing for a career in IT, check out WGU's College of Information Technology at wgu.edu/IT. We hope you'll tune in next time.